Hi and welcome to the Ross Republic podcast. My name is Adrian. I'm partner at Ross Republic. This episode is about why SME and scale-up funding has entered a new era. And I'm really happy that we're joined by the CEO and co-founder of Uncapped, Piotr Pisarz. First of all, thanks that you take the time, and how are you doing?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I'm great. How are you doing?
Yeah, amazing. Me too. Yeah, it's been a long time in the making, so I'm really excited about this one. Well, maybe as a quick introduction, before Piotr co-founded Uncapped, and of course we'll go a little bit into, into detail what Uncapped is all about. You worked actually in the VC industry before at several VC firms, and before that 4 years at Google. And I always find it interesting when someone works in the VC industry, very obviously speak to entrepreneurs and see how businesses are built on a daily basis, then decide to jump into entrepreneurship themselves. Yeah, what were like the reasons maybe that you can mention at least that really led you to decide to jump into entrepreneurship yourself?
I just, you know, when I was a VC, I was meeting all these entrepreneurs, and VC is a very particular asset class, you know, only available to this craziest ideas, this like next billion, $10 billion ideas. If you're not building billion-dollar idea, there's no point for you to take a VC money.
Yeah.
But you know, majority of the businesses will not be billion-dollar ideas, and they need the money. And usually, a lot of businesses need the money not because they want to do something crazy, but because they want to buy inventory, they want to buy goods, they want to hire salespeople, they want money for the marketing.
Yeah.
And VC money is not the right way to fund this part of expense. At the same time, no one is doing this right. So I thought the opportunity to provide debt rather than equity to this next generation of businesses is huge. And I thought, I just thought if I don't do that, someone else will, and I will regret it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's really cool. And yeah, I agree. I think sometimes you, if you're at the front line of a certain industry and you see all these startups, then it's interesting that you see patterns that some of them are not the right model for the VC or not the right firms for the VC model. And as everyone knows, the traditional banking industry is also not the one that really supports early stage companies or even e-commerce companies in that sense, I would say. So definitely a market gap, and you were founded in 2019. So zero interest rate environment still, and like I think probably the VC or at least European VC funding into fintechs was probably at historical highs. So I think timing very good from that perspective compared to maybe today. But we'll talk a little bit in this episode also about the macro factors and what changed from 2 years to now in the lending industry, and of course how Uncapped is innovating the debt space for e-commerce companies. Maybe also before we go more into that, I think as an intro, it might be really interesting to get the listeners into the right mindset. We're now over 40 episodes, and in episode 27, we had another VC, Saket Kumar. He's also based in London. I don't know if you know him actually, but he had exactly the same background story where he saw the exact same problem where he had pitches from SaaS and e-commerce firms, and they were not the right ones for the VC model. They now pivoted into, I think, a treasury system now. But that, and also we mentioned some time ago a blog post from another VC, from John Luttig from Founders Fund, who read the market really well in one of his blog posts, where he said that the return of investment into the sales and marketing spend becomes actually quite predictable, especially in e-commerce, especially in SaaS. So do you really need a VC layer on top of that where you're not really funding an R&D risk or something? It's rather, you know market and where it's going, and then you throw money into B2B SaaS, for example. Not sure if VCs are meant to do that, but they're kind of arbitraging the situation that founders had nowhere else to turn and had to give away equity. But now there's this new kind of like tech-specific approach where you have like debt offerings that really build on these operating KPIs, because it's so well understood in e-com and in SaaS what metrics you have to look at to understand is this a healthy business or not. And then the second point, what I'm excited about to go deeper in a minute with you as well, is why the traditional banking system can't really solve that, because they don't have this really deep understanding of that industry and the metrics. Like, they don't think in terms of customer lifetime value and churn and customer acquisition cost when they underwrite a loan. And also, they don't have the tech DNA to pull it off. And I think that's what you probably saw, and you knew yourself as well, where there's this demand for a new type of fintech lender. So yeah, how, can you share anything around these like kind of factors? I think there were many elements that came into place you know, fintech APIs, data that your customers can share online directly to you. So at that time, when you started off, I think a lot of elements have been actually in place to pull it off then. Yeah.
Exactly. I think, you know, when you build a business, it's important to ask yourself a question, why now? Why this business can we build now? And, you know, OpenAI is possible not only because, you know, the GPU technology is just got so good that we finally have enough firepower. You know, people were thinking of, you know, LLM models for 20 years, but we never had a processing power big enough. Same thing is with Uncapped. You know, building Uncapped 10 years ago would be impossible because, first of all, e-commerce was too small. You know, people weren't buying enough online. Today, e-commerce is about 40% of all commerce. You know, way more clothes are bought online. You know, if you people buy on Amazon instead of going to a store for a lot of purchases. Secondly, the tooling of SMEs moved to the cloud. You know, like we used to have on-prem solutions. You know, you used to work with an accountant who probably coded something in their computer. Now, you know, everyone uses Xero, QuickBooks, you know, it's online. You know, revenue, it's in Shopify. Banking, we have open banking. You don't have to send the bank statements. We can access it in real time. So this means that the access to data is available. And these two factors mean that, you know, finally, it's possible to build a next generation lending business geared towards this online first businesses. And it wasn't possible 10 years ago. And this is a very interesting dilemma for the traditional institutions. You know, this is there's a thing called innovator's dilemma. And sometimes incumbents don't have enough incentive to go to the new space because it would cannibalize their own business. Here, the problem is for a long time, market was too small and probably still is too small for the big banks to invest huge resources into attacking this space. And you know, this requires massive investment to understand e-commerce companies well. It's a massive investment in the team, in the culture, in processes, in brand, in technology. And like a company like ours, who's fully dedicated to do that, is much better positioned than the traditional banks. And our view is that, you know, give us 5 more years and e-commerce starting to become commerce. And then everyone will realize, hey, we need a technology like Uncapped has, and you know, it will become a very valuable asset for everyone.
Yeah. No, I fully agree. And I think for the first of all, in the UK, I think it's kind of everyone looks at that market to see where generally the needle is moving. And I think you have the alternative lenders overtook the traditional banks when it comes to funding the economy. I think the percentage is higher for the alternative lenders than the actual traditional banks. And secondly, just also out of regulation, and that keeps banks away a little bit from the even smaller segment of the market. And especially if you're an e-commerce company or someone that has like no, let's say, assets that banks, how they define it in the traditional way, they just don't want to touch these kind of businesses. So I agree that that's, I think, what created this kind of white space in the first place. At the same time, I think lending itself, like the way it was done before, you just need to automate a lot to make this really successful. And especially on the low end of the market, where you don't want to have a lot of human resources to really look at the metrics and to make manual investment decisions. In the end, it's kind of like a margin game and a scale game, right? So you need to build this from the beginning in the right way. And when you start from scratch, that's also a little bit easier than from if you have done this for 50 years. That's, I think, what the banks have also struggled with. Using APIs sounds easy, but if you're looking at legacy tech, that can be one big challenge actually as well.
I think the problem for the banks is just about the size and the focus. You know, like if I'm a bank, why would I focus so much on the e-commerce segment when, you know, I probably have a construction industry or mortgage market or a few other markets which are so much bigger, and like you will always go after these other opportunities which on paper look bigger, and at one point you realize, oh my god, there is this like super fast growing segment and I missed out on this. And you know, the banks, traditional banks, they can always come back. You know, they have advantage of a cost of capital, of a distribution, so it's not easy to compete with them. And I think a lot of companies like ours will team up with the banks eventually to, you know, offer what's best on both sides, you know, and like us providing technology and brand and culture, and the banks providing, you know, capital and distribution.
Yeah, definitely see that happening as well. If we maybe talk a little bit about the macro and factors right now, I think during COVID, obviously everyone had to be an e-commerce player, otherwise you wouldn't make any sale. So that was definitely a boost. And then it super quickly changed, right? So then suddenly you had inflation really high and funding costs really high. So especially for alternative lenders, I think like yourself, I don't know how much you can share about that, obviously, but also the whole like wholesale funding costs. And if you have to collect debt from others and then use that for your own funding, that whole dynamic obviously really flipped really, really quickly. So how did that impact you? How was it before? How was it afterwards? Like, how quickly did you need to change your operations in that sense?
Very quickly. You know, interest rates increased suddenly by a lot. The whole market has changed. And it's not only the interest rates that changed. You know, like, frankly, we see much more, like, it was so easy to be a commerce company 3 years ago. It's much harder today. You know, the market is much less receptive. People have much less money. And I think it's an objective statement right now. You know, a lot of companies are struggling. And so, you know, we approve probably one-fourth of the companies we were approving in the past. Because we see so many businesses struggling, you know. They didn't adjust to the new reality. They didn't restructure operations. The margins, they stopped working. And it's a problem in the industry everywhere. So it is much more difficult to run the business nowadays. But I think if you do, if you will succeed now, you will succeed enormously further down the line when the market rebounds.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think the lenders that really survive, and yeah, we can talk about this as well. And when we talk about uncapped and how you have built like your quite unique way of how you underwrite businesses, but essentially the ones that go through this cycle now and have a database of also defaults, like healthy defaults in the sense that you know exactly how to adjust your risk models also in this environment, that's like the secret sauce in the end. Then you're kind of unbeatable because you can't buy these data sets really. So it's like, if you have that first-hand experience in good times and bad times and survive this and know what to look out for, that's really amazing once you get to that point, yeah. All right, and did you also see like demand going down, or is this like in general at the current?
Actually, demand went up.
Okay,
because everyone else became much more stricter.
Yeah, right,
yeah. And access to cheap VC money disappeared. So it used to be that good companies were just flooded with VC money, and everyone was investing everywhere, and suddenly VC money disappeared, like completely. Right. So people were coming to us, but for the wrong reasons. They were not looking for the money to invest in the inventory. They were looking for the money because, hey, we are burning so much and like we need the lifeline.
Yeah.
And it wasn't us. It's not us.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Okay. That's understood. And okay, so you're also a little bit more restrictive in that sense to really look at who's healthy, who's fundable, also on your side. Over half a year ago, you also got a new debt funding line over, I think, 230 million euros. So I think that makes you one of the best funded alternative players in Europe right now, especially in the line of business that you're in. And you also made some changes in the product offering. If you talk about now uncapped and what you're doing, so essentially you started out in the hype of the peak of the hype cycle of revenue based financing, which really came I think from the US and then kind of conquered Europe, where you had every week a new funding announcement of a new RBF provider for SaaS, for e-com. It's a quite unique type of funding, and in Europe still to be seen if it will really be a product line that will, you know, be part of the product portfolio of lenders, or if it will disappear again. I don't know. It's too early to say maybe, but I think you had an interesting blog post recently where you said you went away from a little bit from that origin and focus more on just interest-based funding products. Let's maybe talk about that. Like,
Sure. You know, the company started as a revenue-based finance provider. And I thought the model is brilliant. I thought the model is smart, you know. You offer the loan to the customer and they repay when they generate sales. Sounds great. Sounds fair. There's one big problem. The good customers, this model has a fixed fee, right? So you pay, let's say you pay 6% independent if you repay the loan and, you know, you share within 20% of sales. And then it doesn't matter if you repay in 1 month, 2 months, 5 months or 10 months, you pay the same fee. So what does it mean? It means that if I'm a good customer who took money from me, bought inventory, and the product was flying off the shelves, I'm a good client, I'm repaying the loan much faster. My real cost of capital is extremely high. So I'm a good customer and I'm penalized, I'm unhappy, I'm coming back and saying, Piotr, your loan is super expensive, Nick, I'm not gonna work with you anymore. And then I have a bad customer who's like, oh man, I bought this inventory, they miscalculated, it took me 10 months to repay, this is the cheapest loan I ever got. So what's happening? Bad customers are like, hey, I want money from you. And good customers, I'm never working with you again. It's wrong. It's the construct of a product and the fundamentals are wrong. That's why we had to move away from it. And, you know, move to a fixed loan repayment, which in our view is much more fair, is predictable, you know what you get. And when you're a bad customer, you can't make the repayments, we make you pay more in a fees, and it's fair because as a good customer, you pay only what we agreed on and like no surprises.
Yeah.
And that's the main reason why we did that.
Yeah, interesting. I think it's almost a like really philosophical question or like really subjective question that you can ask a lot of people what they think about this product, and you get obviously 10 different answers because some say it is fair because you know in advance how much it will cost, so then it's of course no one can really look into the future. If your sales get really crazy, then you just repay really quickly, but you knew it before, right? So but still it's if I understand these clients, if they can get at some point then a cheaper type of capital, then they would go there, of course, because they're a loan is a loan. So it's not really obviously differentiated as a product itself, which we can talk about also in a minute. But yeah, to just go back to beginnings, founded in 19, you're now fully, or are you still a fully remote company or?
No. Remote was a very bad experiment.
Okay.
I mean, I'm exaggerating. It was not that bad and it was a must have during the COVID, but we do see a lot of value from working together. And we're putting more and more emphasis on how can we work together in the location. So, you know, we have a London HQ, we have Atlanta office, we have a Warsaw office, and we used to hire everywhere. Now we really try to focus on hiring in hubs.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And financed over 1,000 businesses already, ranging from e-commerce, direct to consumer, fashion, SaaS. So basically what we said at the beginning, I think it's clear to mention also that most these are like, in general, if SMEs in Europe are underserved by banks, then these are the type of industries that are especially underserved and getting a number of declines by traditional lenders. Just because they don't have they don't have collateral and they're seen as high risk and often just reinvest a lot in the business itself. So if you just look at the annual statements, if from a traditional point of view, it might look bad because they're barely profitable or even not profitable, but it's because they just really invest in the business, and that needs a specific point of view on how to underwrite them.
Listen, I would say as someone who's doing these loans, it's so hard to make them, and you cannot make these decisions without major investment with technology and having like latest numbers, because sometimes we are like literally looking, okay, what is the ROAS on the latest campaigns? Is it improving? Is it deteriorating? Oh, we see, okay, they're doing okay. Like they finally will be break even. And if you don't have access to this really granular detailed data, there's no way to make the correct decision. So I'm not surprised why the access to the capital for these companies is so limited. Because it's so hard, and it's very, very, very hard to make it right, you know, because you can only make, you know, 1-2% of mistakes, you know, per year, yeah, to make it work as a model.
Yeah, exactly. And let's maybe jump back at the beginning. So I know any fintech founder that wants to build up a new lending business, you know, building the online customer journeys and to make it look really nice and easy for the client, and you log in and you use some data aggregators to pull this kind of data in. That's, let's say, it's also hard to do, but let's say the easy part. The hard part is then what you do with these kind of data points to decide how far back do you want to look historically into the business, what metrics really matter, because in the end, what we want to avoid is a default. So really knowing what to look at can be theoretically clear at the beginning, but when once you start building your models and your decisioning flow, that can be also, especially when you have nothing to start out with. And also in your case, you know, you couldn't build on 20 years of default data or something when you started out, or like, let's say, bank lending experience, which kind of as kind of IP. So if you have nothing, what would you just like, what you can share, of course, in terms of founders in the lending space, how did you solve that starter question? You know, in my experience, I think people just start with like rough rules and then improve as they go. But this is, of course, you're playing with a little bit of the money there, right? So, yeah,
it's tough. It's tough. And listen, if I knew how tough it is, I don't think I would ever start this company. I think there are way easier ways to make a living. You start very manual. Like you start, when we launched, you know, it was me with Excel looking at every single business. When you slowly build the team and build the technology, build the rules, and you know, you slowly automate things, not everything, and it's a slow process. You know, you have more clients, you learn more. You know, yesterday we had a big case of a big fraud. You know, someone defrauded us for a large amount of money. Not only us, but frankly, like 5 other lenders. It sucks, you know, it sucks, it's painful. But also it's a great opportunity to now learn, okay, how can we spot this kind of fraud going forward? Because this was a fraud, you know, like, and hopefully we'll learn and it will make us stronger in the future, because we will learn how to avoid these mistakes for the many more years to come.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I agree. So you start off manually, and then over time you kind of codify everything and try to build it into software. Yeah. And so if someone signs up for Uncapped right now, obviously you have several data connections that you require. So I think right now, if someone wants to get a loan from you, they have to connect the bank accounts. I think you also just announced a new partnership with an open banking provider to pull almost real-time banking data from basically all business bank accounts. You look into the accounting systems and into the sales platforms if they, for example, run on Shopify. Are these like the key things you have to connect, or is there what are like the key data points that someone has to provide to Uncapped?
If you are a small business, I think it's Amazon seller. It's all about Amazon account and banking data. If you're a larger business, we'll also ask for accounting data. And then gradually we might have some follow-up questions. Yeah, like, you know, the bigger loan you want to take, the more questions you will have. If you're asking us for a $5 million loan, we probably will investigate quite thoroughly. If you're asking for a $10,000 loan, I have to make a decision with much more limited set of data.
Yeah, cool. And you also recently launched this credit line product for sellers that I think make over 5 to 6 in revenue per year. And that's also interesting, I think, because you're moving also a little bit more upmarket in that sense, where so it's not that this type of online lending is just for Amazon sellers that use this as a side business and make like 100K per year, right? But this is also a very relevant product for larger businesses that also might feel underserved. And I think the opportunity to go up market is actually super strong as well, because there are many businesses that are, for example, an e-com player that make 100 million per year and also feel really, really not well understood by their banking partners when they have a meeting and explain why they need a loan, for example. So how did you decide? Because I think that's quite recent. Was it like also triggered that you saw this demand just from these larger businesses that also require higher tickets, but would also just use a credit line?
Our credit line product is about certainty of funding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our big merchants, the feedback we're getting from them is like, they're coming to us and say, well, Piotr, this 2 million you're giving me today is amazing. But what I'm really looking for is a long-term partner. I don't want to stress about coming to you for money, for another tranche of money and another tranche of money and another tranche of money. So what we're telling this customer is, listen, this is a framework. This is the credit limit we're giving you. And as long as you keep these milestones, we'll keep funding you. And this is how much money we'll be giving you. So the client knows very well in advance, for example, as long as my sales are X and as long as I'm profitable or my ROAS is X, I can keep borrowing money from Uncapped. And they love it, you know, because they can now plan their business much more into the future without worrying about the working capital they need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes total sense to me as a use case as well. Yeah, and also something that's interesting is because, like, when I say a loan is undifferentiated, because obviously money is money, and of course people look at the pricing, it's still very transactional. So even though probably they love your brand and your product because they can't get funding from a lot of other places, it's still, you know, you get the loan and then you go back to business. And then you, of course, want to build a type of relationship that they come back to you for funding and you have this long-term relationship. So I found it interesting, and maybe also as a, from a product innovation perspective, to kind of extend the product a little bit more into, let's say, broadly business banking, or in that sense that you give them the funding so they need to have the tools to spend this kind of money as well. And if you know already, it will go into marketing expenses. That's usually paid with a credit card, for example. So why not attach that as well as an extension of your product, for example? So you have this uncapped Visa card, for example. What was the thinking behind that? Was it just because of this, you know, that you have another touch point with your clients, or was it in high demand, or is it maybe just a side product that's not used a lot, or how would you describe this?
Card was, the real reason to use card was to make more money.
Yeah.
You know, when we issue a card, you also make money on the spend, which is going through this card. So this is the way for us to capture some of the, you know, banking, American Express, Visa revenue for ourselves. The truth is, majority of the money that clients want go to the inventory. And frankly, pushing them to use the card was a bit of a distraction. And it was complicating the user journey. Like, it was like, oh my God, I have to educate on the product, and we'll give you a different price. If you use the card, we'll give you a different price. If you use inventory, overcomplicate things. Yeah. And, you know, what I learned is make product simple. You want the money, like, the money go to your bank accounts. It's simple proposition. And that's what we did. We simplified. So we removed the card, and now we are giving the customers the cash. Another reason to do it was to actually prevent the fraud, but it was very difficult. It was very, very difficult to make it work.
Understood. And in terms of something that I'm also interested in, if you say you simplest and strictest way is just to pay out the money into the client's bank account. Since you're not a bank, it's always third party bank accounts like an HSBC or whatever they're using. The repayments they make is that you just charge the account, right? Or yeah, you automatically debit to these accounts. Yeah.
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 We tried to build a bank ourselves and we failed. It was a huge distraction. Again, you know.
All right, I read about it. Yeah, the bank account project.
Yeah, the problem was, you know, it was a peak of funding. You know, everyone was, and the fintech investments were going through the roof. You know, think about Brex, everyone else.
Yeah.
You know, you see the Brex valuation number, you're like thinking, oh my God, like, they're doing so well. Like, I have this nice wedge into these clients. I'm going to give them the credit. Can I also attach a bank account? Oh my God, we failed so much. We hired a huge team. We had a team from Revolut Business, you know, the team which built arguably the most successful SME banking product in Europe. And then 1 year later, we had more people working with product than clients. And there was zero product market fit. Like, we couldn't find a single customer using the product. And this was a decision where, like, it was like, oh my God, it's terrible. Like, let's shut it down. It's an absolute failure. Lost huge amount of money because of that. And probably the biggest mistake I've made in my professional career.
Mm, yeah. Well, it's good that at least it was on a scale that didn't kill the whole company, right? So, yeah. But yeah, interesting. I think with this whole bank account topic, again, it's something that makes a lot of sense on paper. But then if someone asks you for funding, they probably have already a running business and your requirement is anyways like 6 months at least, right? So they have everything set up. And I know from personal experience, just tell someone, well, okay, now you change your business bank account and change all your direct debits to that new one, it's not going to happen. So it's a very sticky product, obviously. So yeah, interesting development. And yeah, so can you then, if you close off the podcast, share a little bit how your what your main tasks now look like as CEO? What are like your top three things that you're usually working on now? Is it more on the company building itself, or are you like, what kind of topics are you mostly involved in?
Number one is always people. You know, how do I upskill the people in the company? How do I bring in the best talents to the company? You know, like, there is not a single day when I don't talk with my team about, you know, the team. Do we have the right team? How is everyone doing? How we can help them grow? How we can help manage the team? What are the issues? Number two is, you know, as a CEO, you are the best salesperson. I think, like, you're not the best salesperson, but you are the ultimate salesperson of a company. Like, no one has more power to close the deal than the employee. Like, you know, the employee doesn't have the autonomy to do something. And as a CEO, you can come in and can, like, you know, negotiate live with a customer and close the deal at the crazy, and, you know, do the things that, like, it's just impossible for the employee. And you show the level of care and the commitment to the client when the CEO is talking to the client, which is outstanding. And, you know, this is the ultimate weapon. So I do still spend a lot of time, you know, meeting the clients, especially in the United States.
Okay, cool. So that's not the Amazon loans, but probably more the higher ticket sizes, or
exactly.
Yeah.
So I spend a lot of time, you know, traveling back and forth, you know, doing the events, doing the PR, but and meeting the customers, you know, like, and then, you know, it's all about, you know, investor relations, investors management, you know, finance, and like, you know, setting the direction for the company. You know, this is also the job of a CEO. It is very hard to give to someone else.
Sure. Yeah. And when you say direction of the company, so basically now, since you made your learnings around product extensions, what works, what doesn't work, and to really scale up this lending business, is the playbook now just to say you're becoming really, really efficient, understanding who's fundable versus who's not, and being a really efficient lender, like you said it yourself right now, that, you know, it's sometimes more about getting them the money quickly instead of, you know, pushing customers through other kind of customer journeys. So just being a really efficient lender, so like a place where you as an e-com or SaaS business or an Amazon seller can go to if you need funding, and quickly and at fair terms. So basically really doing this pure play, let's say, fintech lender, really, really efficient, and probably expansion, and just sticking to that. Yeah.
Exactly.
So no product experiments or
we do experiment a bit, but it's all within our parameters.
Yeah, cool. Amazing. I think this whole alternative lending space is super interesting. So if you're selling online and you're operating in the UK, US, Germany, Spain, or Poland, then definitely check out weareuncapped.com. It's also going to be in the show notes. And my pleasure that you took the time, and super interesting. Also one of the few that made it so far out of everyone that started like 3 or 4 years ago in this space. Amazing. Awesome. And thanks a lot for joining, Piotr.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.